Hi, I'm Steve Clemens, and I have a question. As Russia finds itself backed into a corner in Ukraine, could this war go nuclear? Let's get to the bottom line. It started 7 months ago, and there's no end in sight. The Ukrainian military has made some major advances, but Russia still controls 20% of the country, and there's nothing to suggest that this war is winding down. The Ukrainian military is backed up by Western weapons and Western intelligence gathering, which tells them where the Russian soldiers are and where ammunition is being stored. President Joe Biden has asked Congress to provide a new package of about $12 billion of aid to Ukraine on top of the nearly $50 billion sent there in the past year. And Moscow is doubling down, too. Hundreds of thousands of military reserves are being called up now. Referendums are being held in the Ukrainian territories that Russia controls, asking folks whether they'd prefer to belong to Ukraine or to Russia. And Putin recently said something really remarkable. He said he's not bluffing when he threatened to, quote, make use of all weapon systems available. And you know what that means. He is talking about nuclear weapons, too. So are things taking a turn for the worse? And could this war go nuclear? Today, we're talking with Corey Shockey, Director of Foreign and Defense Policy Studies at the American Enterprise Institute, who served as Director for Defense Strategy in the National Security Council under President George W. Bush. She's also author of America Versus the West, Can the Liberal World Order Be Preserved? And John Wolfstall, former advisor to President Barack Obama and now a senior advisor to the Global Zero Initiative, which works on the elimination of nuclear weapons. He blogs at the Substack site Boom Boom Boom. Read it. It's very interesting. Let me just ask you both, and I'm going to start with you, Corey. Where has the notion that we need to know about nuclear weapons and how to respond to them gone structurally in our defense analysis and our defense plans?
Well, there are certainly still a cadre of people who care desperately and work carefully on the issue. The James Martin Institute in Monterey, the MIT Political Science Department, right. Stratcom, all sorts of people. But we have had the good fortune for the last 30 years to not have to care about this problem. And the return of nuclear menace as Russia loses its war in Ukraine, and the dramatic expansion of China's nuclear weapons program, the emergence of programs in Iran and North Korea, are causing a lot of people who study national security to focus their attention back on this field.
Well, John, you have written a piece to this point called Deterring Putin's Nuclear Threats in your Boom, Boom, Boom Substack websites. Fascinating piece. And you sort of reveal that there have been simulations and thinking about this when you served in the Obama administration. So Vladimir Putin is out there right now, looks to a lot of folks like he's in a bit of a corner, taking some desperate actions inside Ukraine, mobilizing hundreds of thousands of new forces to be deployed to Ukraine, but also threatening potential use of nuclear weapons. What's your take on how serious Vladimir Putin is?
Well, first of all, he's very dangerous. Just ask the people of Ukraine and ask the people of Europe who have been disrupted by it. The reality is you can't put a percentage on risk. We know that Vladimir Putin has nuclear weapons. We know that he's willing to use force to achieve his goals. And he's fully capable of launching nuclear weapons. And so the risk is not zero. And therefore, we have to take it seriously. Fortunately, inside any administration, there are professionals who work these issues, both in the military and in the civilian side, that think through what are the threats, is the United States safe and secure, are our allies safe and secure, and more importantly, how do we deter enemies from doing things that we don't want them to do? We can deter them by denying them the benefits they might seek to achieve, or by punishing them to such an extent that they never benefit from their attacks. Obviously, what we'd like to do is be so effective at deterrent that they never even think about using nuclear weapons. But Putin's already crossed that threshold. And now we're very much in the business, as being seen by President Biden and Secretary of State Tony Blinken, making very clear publicly that they've communicated to Russia that any use of nuclear weapons would never succeed, that they would be punished to an extent that would never make the attack worthwhile, and they shouldn't even think about it.
Corey, I would ask you, what can the West do credibly? And do you feel like we're handling this defining moment for the solvency of American power, for NATO, for the Western alliance? Are we doing well at this moment?
I think we're doing reasonably well. I agree with John that it matters that the White House and other parts of the government have made clear that we are talking to the Russians and making concrete consequences clear should Russia choose to use a nuclear weapon against the people of Ukraine. Where I think they could do better is to be even more explicit about what the consequences of Russia's actions would be should they make that fateful policy choice. It sounded to me in the coverage of the Biden administration's talks with the Russians that, as the president said, you know, we're talking about in general. We're not talking about specific concrete responses. I personally think, given how broad the gap is between the strategy of the Biden administration and its willingness and ability to carry out its strategy, that we need to be more explicit. We should be telling the Russians that our intelligence has been very good in this war so far. We are dedicating intelligence assets to determining whether the Russians are moving weapons into operational positions. And if they are, we will make that intelligence public. So Russia has to bear consequences, not just with the United States and Ukraine, but other countries. Second thing we should be doing is telling the Russians that if we see them moving to use a nuclear weapon in Ukraine, we will interdict it if we have the ability to do so, to take that tool out of their hands. Third thing, if we fail to interdict their use, that we will send American and other NATO forces to Ukraine to help ameliorate the consequences of it. So effects, consequence management, but we will also join the war on the side of Ukraine because we need to make sure the Russians understand that the use of this weapon won't change the outcome of the war. It will simply change the cost of the war, and it will dramatically raise the cost to them. And the fourth thing we should be telling them is that we will hunt down and bring to justice every single Russian involved in the policy decision or the execution of such an order.
So you have just helped define something, Corey Shockey, that I was asking in a tweet when I heard Biden National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan say the results of any action. I have to ask myself, you know, when Joe Biden and Jake Sullivan are talking about their concern of nuclear and chemical weapons, there must be some intelligence that's forcing them to, you know, express those concerns. And I ask, please define catastrophic. So you've begun to do that, you know, and begun to look at. But what I'm hearing you say is really something that sounds a lot like a next world war. Am I wrong, John?
Well, I don't think you're wrong, and I'd like to take the point to, or the opportunity to agree with almost everything Corey just said.
What do you not agree with?
So I agree with most of the points, but I don't agree about the idea that we should be ready to interdict and preempt nuclear use by Russia. And I think
why not?
Because one, human beings make mistakes, and we misinterpret moves that could be a prelude to an attack, which are actually something else. We have to acknowledge that our intelligence is not always perfect, and that's been demonstrated multiple times in the past. But I think that's very much on the minds of President Biden and other leaders, which is we want to do everything we can to make Vladimir Putin's life difficult without turning this into World War III. If Putin chooses to cross the nuclear threshold, he can do so without moving troops or without moving missiles around. He has nuclear weapons deployed on submarines, deployed on in silos that could be launched without any notice and any preparation. So we can't simply bomb our nuclear problem away with Putin. What we can say to him, and I agree with Corey on this, that if he were to use a nuclear weapon, we should make it clear that he's now in a war with the United States and all of NATO, and that we will hold everybody, including him, directly and personally responsible. It would be the end not only of Russia's position of power in the world, but of his rule in Russia, no matter how long it takes. And I think the United States is very credible on that, whether it is Osama bin Laden or other people that have challenged the United States at a strategic level. But we have to be very careful, and I think this goes, and Corey and I may disagree on this, in terms of what assistance we are prepared to provide Ukraine. We should do everything we can to make sure Ukraine survives, that they can defeat Russian aggression, and they can reclaim Ukrainian territory. And we have to do that without creating a dynamic where Russia itself will feel directly threatened by Ukraine or the United States so that we can bring this war to a conclusion without Russian troops on Ukrainian territory. And that is a very, very small landing strip that the president and others are trying to get into. And we have to be cautious not to overreach in terms of our capabilities or the consequences.
Let me ask you both where you think this conflict is going. Is there a negotiated end? Are both sides kind of, are they kind of negotiating with each other? The Russians are saying, hey, here's what we could do. Zelensky is out there saying, we'll never give up an inch of land. We'll go forever. It's just sort of interesting that when you begin looking into the abyss of truly horrific global exchange that could expand far further, does the world have to acquiesce to some butchering up of Ukraine as a way to get out of this? Corey?
You know, where I disagree with John just a minute ago and with you, Steve, is that it does not deter adversaries to project all of our fears onto the public record, right? President Biden is right to worry about World War III. He's right to think we need to have policies that minimize the effects. But to tell your adversary repeatedly all you are afraid of isn't deterrence, right? Russia is losing a war to Ukraine. It's losing a war with conventional forces to Ukraine. It looks like the Russians begin to try and make nuclear threats and threats of, you know, environmental terrorism, attacking their own Nord Stream pipelines. And so, yes, this is scary. Yes, it is dangerous. That is the nature of warfare. And yet we should not lose perspective that we are the strong ones in this equation, not the weak ones. And we should be projecting our strength into the conversation, not all of our anxieties of what we're afraid might happen, because to do that encourages Russia to believe that they can set the conditions of the end of the war they are losing, that they can use nuclear and other threats to affect American behavior. That's just not good deterrent strategy.
I find your perspective really fascinating, Corey, and I think a very important contribution here. Nonetheless, the Russians are working to annex these large portions of territory. It just sort of begs the question of, as you look at them, I mean, this looks like a war that's not going to wind down anytime soon. And so maybe it would be naive to even ask the question of how we get to that solution. But right now, clearly, as a result of what, Corey, you see the Russians losing this war, doing steps that are potentially very destabilizing inside Moscow with the mobilization of these men. We just saw pictures of a 10-mile-long line of folks trying to get out of the country. So it has now come home to Moscow, the consequences of this. And so I'm interested, just very quickly, in as you begin looking at it, and maybe we don't translate and transmit our fears, but when you come to the broader question of what does NATO and the transatlantic alliance need to achieve or send, where does this go by way of Russia? Is it the complete emasculation and defeat of Russia, or is there some middle ground?
So that's up to Russia. Hmm. I was in Kyiv a couple of weeks ago, and President Zelensky captured it perfectly. He said that there are people trying to persuade him to make concessions to Russia to bring the war to an end. What Ukraine is instead trying to do is set the conditions for bringing the war to an end. Hmm. You know, it's popular to say military force can't solve this problem. Military force is solving this problem. Hmm. And Russia can lose in a bunch of different ways. It can enter into negotiations now with the Ukrainians. It can enter into negotiations once they lose Crimea. There are lots of different off-ramps, but we shouldn't be either ourselves or pushing Ukraine to make concessions that Russia's invasion of Ukraine and the catastrophic performance of Russia's military have imposed upon Russia itself. As the great Frank Miller, who works a lot on nuclear strategy, is fond of saying, the line judge doesn't disqualify a swimmer. The swimmer disqualifies a swimmer. Russia has set the conditions for the outcome of this war by invading Ukraine and by having a catastrophically bad military strategy that they can't even execute.
John, I know you wanted to jump in.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, I agree with Corey. I mean, I don't think the United States should be pushing Ukraine at all to make concessions. I think the bravery shown by the Ukrainian people, the creativity of their military, I think does change the landscape in Europe. And quite frankly, I think a lot of people are going to be asking when this war does end, why don't we bring Ukraine into NATO? Because they know better than anybody how to hold risks and threats like Russia at bay. I think the question is, what is the end goal for Ukraine? Are they going to be satisfied with repelling Russia from the territory they've occupied since February? Will they say, now that we've liberated those areas, we now want to go and liberate the Crimea? And recognize that even if that is the legitimate right of Ukraine to do, and even if the United States wants to support that, that does create new challenges and risks of escalation for Putin. I think Corey and I would agree we would like Putin to be gone. We'd prefer an internal coup. We prefer him to be defeated. We want to see Ukraine victorious on the battlefield. And so far right now, that's working. The United States, however, to make that possible, needs to deter Putin from escalating this crisis. And that is a very difficult challenge. Putin can use nuclear weapons. He's clearly threatening it to try to influence it, influence us, and that's just a reality. Nuclear weapons do influence foreign leaders. We'd be naive to suggest otherwise. But I don't think that means we're projecting weakness. I think the president has said very clearly to Vladimir Putin, don't even think about it. And by demonstrating our resolve as an alliance to support Ukraine and, if necessary, to respond to the use of nuclear weapons, I think we are projecting strength. I think the real question is, where does the line get drawn? And the reality is that neither Putin nor President Biden nor anybody on this interview really knows where that line is going to be drawn. We have to play it day by day.
Well, John, you put something in your article which I had not thought about, is that Vladimir Putin could decide as a demonstration of resolve to deploy a nuclear weapon in the air and not use it for tactical battlefield use, to just send a signal that he was willing to do that. And that would be historic. That might create an electromagnetic pulse. It might have consequences. What kind of response does the world offer to that? And I guess the other thing I feel so strongly, and I've learned this from Corey Shockey from listening to her for so long, these are not siloed issues from others. The North Koreans are watching. The Iranians are watching. Lots of Pakistan and India are watching. Lots of other worlds that are at nuclear threshold or nuclear capable nations are watching what transpires in these moments. And it just haunts me that the action, while we may not want to escalate the horror, you could create a permission slip in the future. And I'm wondering, how do you not do that? And how do you respond to something like the scenario? I'll be honest, I thought that the way that folks thought about your response was rather weak. And if I were North Koreans, I would take heart, frankly, in what you shared.
Look, I think we have to be careful about not making decisions now based on what it might mean for precedents in the future.
Right.
Job number one is defeating Vladimir Putin in Ukraine. My personal view is that if Vladimir Putin were to use a demonstration strike over the Black Sea, it would be a sign not of resolve but of desperation. And it would show, as Corey has said, that he is losing the war conventionally. I think the least effective thing we could do would be to respond to a demonstration strike with a nuclear weapon demonstration of our own. Because we are winning the war. Ukraine is winning the war. We don't want Putin to feel that he can expand to the nuclear battle space because, quite frankly, when nuclear states go off against each other, nobody wins. I'd rather win the war and beat him conventionally than I would rather fight a nuclear chess-beating competition.
Corey, I'd love to get your thoughts on that as well. But I also want to ask you, as we get close to wrapping this conversation, which has been so fascinating up, is to what degree you worry about Ukraine fatigue, and not only Ukraine fatigue at home here in the United States, where the supplementals, the $12 billion which we're debating to give to the Ukrainians, people begin saying, hey, we need that for other purposes, but also there's that adage, winter is coming, and a lot of European governments are going to be under pressure with the high price of oil and gas and the fact that some supplies are going to be cut off for them.
Yeah, so I think it's right to worry about Western fatigue over Ukraine. But joyfully, that is not what the American public or European publics are experiencing. There's a Pew poll just out a couple of days ago that shows support for Ukraine increasing as time goes on in the West, not decreasing. And I think Germany is an interesting example. I mean, the overwhelming majority of even Green Party pacifists in Germany favor arming and supporting Ukraine. And they're pushing the German government to a more assertive position. And I think you see the same dynamic in the United States over time. So that's great. The answer to your question about what is the right response to a nuclear threat? The right response is to diminish the value of nuclear possession and nuclear threats by telling an adversary that the kind of weapon they use will make no difference to the outcome of the war, that we remain committed to winning the war irrespective of what kind of weapons they use, and we will hunt down and bring to justice anybody responsible for the decision or the execution of an order to use a nuclear weapon in any aspect, demonstrative or otherwise.
Corey, before I leave you, you have said that now a couple of times very compellingly. And honestly, and maybe I've missed this, I haven't heard Jake Sullivan say that. I haven't heard our Secretary of State, Tony Blinken, have not heard the President of the United States say, we're going to hunt down and hold accountable anyone involved in the long line of decision makers that were involved with the use of that. And basically saying this would be a horrific crime against humanity and hold them to account. Why do you think we haven't heard those words, or at least I haven't heard those words?
Well, I very much hope they are saying those words privately. And I very much hope they will soon say them publicly.
John, what do you think about this challenge of fatigue?
Well, I worry about fatigue not because the American public or the European public are going to get tired. I think Corey is exactly right that right now, particularly as the war is going well or better for Ukraine, support is very strong. I do worry about political instability in the United States. I worry about political instability in Europe. That's something that I think Joe Biden and the United States are very aware of. But I think that's why we need to keep making the case that this is not just about Ukraine. This is about protecting the international global security order that has benefited the United States and Europe more than anybody else. But I do also agree with Corey that the message needs to be clear about accountability. I'm very confident that message has been relayed privately up and down the military chain of command in Russia. When I was in government, that was part of the plans that we had in place to signal and message. We can debate whether those are needed publicly or not. I think Vladimir Putin, through Minister Shoigu, General Gerasimov, all the way down through the 12th GMU, understand that very well. And I think they know the United States is prepared and capable of carrying it out.
Well, fascinating discussion, both of you. I think this is, you know, thinking the unthinkable is what we sometimes need to do in national security issues. I want to thank Corey Shockey, Director of Foreign and Defense Policy Studies at the American Enterprise Institute, and John Wolfsthal, Senior Advisor at the Global Zero Initiative. Thanks so much for being with us today.
Thank you.
A pleasure.
So what's the bottom line? The first and last time a nuclear bomb was used in war was 77 years ago by the United States against Japan. Since then, there have been instances when a nuclear exchange almost happened. But is this going to be one of them? To find out, we have to take a closer look at Russia's leadership. President Vladimir Putin sees himself as the one person who can make Russia great again. According to his worldview, the Soviet Union and Russia suffered from decades of humiliation, and now it's time for payback. And that makes him driven and dangerous. No one knows if he'll decide to use a tactical nuke in this war with Ukraine, but the U.S. and its allies have to figure out how to react. By the way, there's no polite way to respond to the use of nuclear weapons, and there are consequences for not responding in kind. That would be the day when we're damned if we do and damned if we don't. And that's the bottom line.